was a big negative for me, how they portrayed Splinter. I mean, I thought it was probably one of the worst characters in the movie, just because he hated humans.
Movies on video cassette.
Welcome to Strange Glow Video.
Guys, I'm being drunk and watching rubbish.
We're oozing with VHS, horror, nostalgia, and more.
New better block glow in the dark.
After returning some videotape, you can get a glow in the dark hand puppet from the movie Casper.
And now, your hosts, Alec, Justin, and Nick.
Hey, you're not allowed to rent here anymore.
Yeah!
Hey everybody, welcome back to Strange Glow Video, and tonight we're going to talk about the newly released Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. So Alec is off for personal reasons, so we're hoping he's back on his feet here soon, but I'm being joined by Nick as usual, and great friend of the podcast, Jerry, so welcome.
Hello.
Who's no longer in his 30s.
Mac, when I've got the Ninja Turtle shirt on too. Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds. So,
oh, nice. I like that.
Jerry is 40 now.
You don't have to say that out loud. Technically, yes, but the shirt still fits.
I'm 40 also. So,
I've got till next April.
It's hard to get my head around that new decade for me, to be honest. What's that? Sorry, Justin.
I've got till next April before I turn 40, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you should. More body parts fall apart after April, just FYI.
I gotta say though, I don't have any gray hairs yet, and I'm feeling pretty good about that. I did find a white one in my beard the other day, and I was like,
Man, I've been graying for a while. My brother's even worse, and he's 3 years younger than me. And but they make you look distinguished, is what I've been told, right?
Yeah, but you got that silver fox look though. So like your skin still looks smooth and baby like.
I appreciate it.
I found my first white hair at 27, but really? I got a lot of them here. I got some on the chest, but I got white pubes too, man. A few of them here and there.
Oh man. I do not have that.
That's what makes me feel old.
Yeah.
Feel old with the pubes, man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have a Ninja Turtle shirt, but I have some toys.
So I love Ninja Turtles, but I just don't have a collection. Like I focus on Ghostbusters and Jurassic Park mostly, and some Marvel stuff. It's
if you try to collect all the NECA Ninja Turtles, man, you got to be rich.
Yeah.
Well, there's too many Turtles lines out right now, in my opinion, because you still have the classic Playmates, which they're re-releasing. Which I almost bought one of the classic mutating turtles because Target's selling those right now as an exclusive.
Oh wow.
And then you've got, you got Playmates, you've got Super 7, and then they're
remaking the Playmate line like they did Kenner with the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so actually Playmates has been doing that long before Kenner ever did. So even in the 90s, I remember going into like the late 90s, I remember going into like KB toy stores and seeing like an updated copyright on the classic Turtles figures. So there's like 3 or 4 releases on some of those right now.
Oh wow! Okay, I didn't know that. That'd be cool. Yeah, I did the same for the Kenner for the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so if you're a vintage collector for Turtles line, you really got to watch out for the copyrights, like as far as the updates, because you might get a '90s re-release or you might get a 2020s re-release. So
is Playmates doing the new movie too?
Yeah, Playmates has these. So I actually picked this up. Let me figure it out where I put it. Yeah, it's all Playmates. So I picked up one of the ooze canisters because
that's cool.
with Ghostbusters, Hasbro bought out Kenner when Kenner was failing as a company. They don't use the same ooze recipe or the slime recipe that they used to. And I haven't cracked this open yet, but I'm curious whether or not Playmates is using the same recipe as they did in the 80s. That's what I'm hoping for. So I got this. It's got a surprise turtle inside.
You should open it up right now.
NECA does the movies, the comic books, and the cartoon, the old cartoon.
Well, and then
they're bringing that back. They're going to start streaming that on Paramount next year.
Yeah, they're going to bring back the original series, which they've done a really good job about having like box sets of home video for those available.
I have the Turtle Van, the Party Wagon DVD box set of all the cartoons. It'd be nice to just stream it. I know there's a YouTube channel out there that you can stream. It'll like have like just play random episodes on it. It's like their official YouTube. But other than that, I just have to go switch the DVDs out, which, you know, it's okay, but it's a pain in the ass.
It's the same reason I like, you know, I've got the Time Life Ghostbusters set, Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And like, I don't watch that a lot unless I'm looking for a specific episode, because you can stream it in a few places now, so it can
right. find what you want. Exactly. My nephew comes over, or the girls, I just put that on there for him, and I just stream it versus go grab it in a DVD. It's just easier. Oh, yeah. So you're opening it up?
Yeah, I got to find this turtle.
And by the way, for this review, is this a review, or like, are we, is this a spoiler
free? Yeah, we're gonna talk spoilers here on this.
Okay.
So this is cute little baby turtle. I think that's fun.
Oh, there you go. I like that.
This looks like the blue slime, which is fun because I can use that for a muncher slime.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Let's see how this looks. Ooh. Ooh, this is like vintage feeling ooze.
Oh, there you go. Oh, wow. Look at it.
Oh, look at that. I need a firehouse to put this through the roof of. That is beautiful. That is real nice, Clark.
Real nice. Real nice to the touch, Clark.
Yeah, actually, that's closer to the vintage consistency than the current Hasbro release. So it's got a secondary cap in there.
Where'd you get that at? Target?
Yeah, Target. But I think everyone's carrying the new movie release stuff.
I'll have to go look into that. Maybe I'll buy that.
Yeah, I'm not going to get the whole figure line just because I'm trying not to collect turtles, but it's ooze, man. Like, how do I not? Like,
yeah.
If I was going to buy one thing, what am I going to get?
I've always wanted their the 80s cartoon NECA figures, but I never got them, and then they're like super expensive now for a set.
You mean just the guys?
Yeah, just the four guys.
That's the only thing I have. That's all I have from the cartoon.
Oh, those are nice. You have the NECA figures?
Mm-hmm. I have the movie ones too.
Yeah, I have the movie ones. I have that, and then I was going to maybe get Shredder. I just never found one that I really liked, and then just kind of forgot about it, to be honest.
Now, this stuff is a little messier than the old school stuff because it's kind of like got a glitter slime to it, but I'm really pleased with how vintage it feels.
Very nice.
Smells a little bit newer, though. Like, you know, there's that very classic slime smell.
The next test is to see if it comes out of the carpet.
I'm going to have to buy a carpet sample for that from like the carpet store. Like, hey, let me see how this sample, clean it up.
Yeah, I know. So, my mom would kill us because we get it in the carpet, so that's why I say it. Because,
well, that's why
that's
why the Ghostbusters firehouse was genius, because everything was pretty good about containing the slime, right? You know, you'd slime through the roof of the firehouse into the firehouse, so it stayed on plastic. And then even for the turtle stuff, like with the playset, you could do a pretty good job of keeping it on the playset without making a huge mess. But let's be realistic, kids make a mess when they're playing with slime,
right?
So let's jump into it. I've got one other thing to show.
Can you guys see me, by the way? Just ask, because my screen went black. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. We can see you. You look as smooth skin and silver fox as ever. It's beautiful.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate it. All right. Well, I'll just keep talking. I don't want to have to start over because my screen's black, but I'll figure it out.
So I got a blue hard hat, made the Con Edison hard hat from Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 recently. So I'm showing that off right now. But we all went and saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. I went in with pretty low expectations. What were you guys' thoughts? I only watched the very first trailer they released, didn't see anything else.
I had high expectations. Not too, like so high, like, oh, this has got to be the best movie. But I definitely was craving like a real Turtles movie since the Michael Bay bullshit. That I only saw like one of his movies and I hated it. So it turned me off from the franchise as far as the new movies. And then when this I saw this coming. I was like, oh man, this could be pretty good. So that was my expectations going into it.
What about you, Nick?
I had really low expectations, especially I didn't watch the trailer till a few days before I saw it, and I hated the trailer, but I liked it a lot more than my impressions were.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the same way. The Michael Bay stuff, I saw the first movie in theaters. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I really hated the Shredder in that first movie. Like, I thought it was, like, over the top kind of crap. The Turtles, I didn't hate. Remember that. Like, I didn't hate Megan Fox. There were some things in there that were unique and were fun, but overall, I didn't even see the second movie in theaters, and I finally watched it on demand, and I didn't even pay attention. I was like, Bebop and Rocksteady.
I saw the second one at a theater because a girl I was seeing wanted to see it, but I watched the first one at home. I don't remember really anything about either one of them. I was happy to see Bebop and Rocksteady because I was always disappointed from the old movies not having them, but it's just not very memorable.
Let me I might switch to my phone real fast, so I'm gonna, you guys keep chatting. I might log off for a second. Be right back.
All right, yeah, we'll see you right back here in a second.
Okay.
So, Nick, you said you had fairly like reasonable expectations here.
I had low expectations, especially after seeing the trailer.
So I only watched the first trailer just because I was trying to stay engaged with an element of surprise, since this is a reboot essentially. But I was pleasantly surprised when I walked out of the theater.
Well, I think they played it at a movie I went to, so I didn't like choose to watch it.
Okay.
I think they played it in front of Barbie, maybe. I think that's what it was.
Okay, so you probably saw a more recent trailer than the original one than when you saw that at Barbie.
Yeah, probably.
So I will say, though, that for rebooting the franchise, I thought they did a pretty good job with making it an interesting story, changing enough elements to make it fresh for a new generation without eliminating what you love about the Turtles. And I think we're at a pretty interesting point with animation. I really like the animation of this movie. It's almost like Into the Spider-Verse was like groundbreaking originally.
Oh, there you guys are.
Can you see us now, Jerry?
Larry.
Called you Larry. Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Yeah, I can see you guys now. I don't know what was going on. I couldn't even turn off my computer, so I was trying to get on my phone.
I didn't like the animation at first, but it grew on me really quickly, and it kind of felt comic booky a little bit.
I like the animation for the most part. I thought it was different enough, and so it appealed to me. The thing I did not like about the animation was that it was too, like, it wasn't symmetrical for some of the characters, like that one lady at the end, whoever she is. Her face was like drawn sideways, almost like the chin. It just looked off, and it's like a lot more cartoony than it needed to be in that sense. So I was like, I wish it was a little bit more on key. I don't know.
So she was the TCRI boss or whatever. And I agree with that. Like her character design, I did not love. So have either of you seen The Bear on Hulu?
The Bear? No, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So it's a TV series about a diner. So,
oh, I heard about it, though.
The voice of April O'Neil in this movie was voiced by one of the actors that's on that show. And I was pleasantly surprised with how she did. So, ultimately, I love the voice talent in this movie. The voice acting in this for an animated movie was amazing. I love the Turtles, and I love the supporting cast. Because the Turtles, they actually had, like, teenagers to voice them. And then the supporting cast, they had a great variety of, like, talented folks to be in it.
And yeah, I agree with the Turtles voicing. You know, having the actual teenagers, it felt like they were actually teenagers. I agree with that. I thought that was good. But I was kind of sold that Seth Rogen was going to have more of a part, and Paul Rudd's in it, right? He's the Gecko. Mm-hmm. And they barely had that number of lines. And like, I was like, okay, I thought this is going to be more. I didn't realize who Seth Rogen, what character Seth Rogen was going to be. And I'm not necessarily a big Seth Rogen fan. I just thought he'd have more than four lines in the movie. They just kind of didn't do much Bebop and Rocksteady, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't care who was voicing them. They just wasn't enough Bebop and Rocksteady.
It was enough Bebop and Rocksteady. I think they tried to cram too many characters into this movie a little bit that it just felt a little rushed. I don't know.
I would agree with that. So, right, that first act is your typical, like, hey, we've got to explain the backstory. We all kind of know that backstory, so I felt like they
But this was different a little bit, too, with the backstory, which was a big negative for me, how they portrayed Splinter. I mean, I thought it was probably one of the worst characters in the movie, just because he hated humans, and I get it. The backstory of him being a rat, and you know, obviously a regular rat, and then I just felt like that was so far off from what we've known about the turtles. I didn't like that the whole movie he basically hates humans, and then the way they made him with, like, I don't know, those white things. I guess those were eyebrows. They look like antennas coming out of his head. I don't know. I didn't like the Splinter character at all, and then trying to be funny and like throw a party. And I'm like, this is not the sensei master you're supposed to be, like, mentoring it from. It was too comical for that.
This is, like, this is a complete reboot. And I try to go in it with a fresh perspective because, like I said, I only watched the original trailer they released. I didn't see anything else. I try to avoid marketing. And I didn't really try to avoid it. I just didn't follow up with it. But I thought Jackie Chan did a great job as Splinter was written. Like, I thought he did a good job with delivering his lines. But to me, the ultimate star of the show, Ice Cube as Superfly, was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I thought he delivered his lines, like, with the
passion and fury.
A passion. Yeah, you believed him, and, like, you felt for the villain in this movie, right? Which I think is always a good thing to do. But I think that's just Ice Cube. Had you voiced that by anyone else, I don't know if it would have worked as well.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, they kind of shied away from the traditional Baxter Stockman story. You know, they said Baxter was his dad, which, whatever, you know, it's a reboot.
And they killed Baxter, like, right away. Didn't they kill him?
Yeah, they killed him.
I was like,
yeah, he died in the opening.
He died in the opening, and I was like, okay, that we're going to see Baxter Stockman. This is not the Fly that I know, which is fine. I guess it's a different kind of take on it, but I was surprised.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect, really. And the villains and the TCRI, like, I think they did a good job with it for a reboot. Like, I think about showing this to my kids, and I'm like, I think they're going to have fun with it because they don't really know a lot about the Turtles. So if this is their introduction, I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, my girls enjoyed it. They know the regular turtles, though, like from you know, the cartoons I've shown them in the movies, and so they're just asking why everything is so different. And you have to try to explain, well, because they're trying to do some, I don't know, recreate the formula. But for me, I feel like sometimes too much change is not necessary. Just don't fix something that's not broken, and try to do too off the beaten path of, like, of what we all know about the franchise and the characters. That's maybe it's just the old man in me getting grumpy about that, but I just feel like sometimes they try to do too much in these movies.
I can agree with that, but also at the same time, I really enjoyed the fact that this felt like a Turtles movie I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, like, when I look at the first of all the movies they've done, right, you know, the original live-action movie, and then the remake, the Michael Bay crap that they put out. This felt like a real unique story to tell. Like, I enjoyed the first animated movie they did, which is essentially an in-canon sequel to Turtles in Time, right? They kind of just said, hey, like, this is still following that same story arc. Right. But at the same time, it's like, so you're having all these mutants kind of work together, and there's a lot of mutants in there, which I appreciated, but some of the character design felt really off to me. Like Genghis Frog.
Mm-hmm.
Like looking like just a little frog, like from Frogger or something. Like I really didn't care for that design.
Yeah, he was just throwing him in there, and he was just so wussy, and it's just like, what? It's like he's not doing anything.
Well, he's not wearing like the Hawaiian shirt and like having that. Now, right. my favorite mutant besides the turtles, obviously, was Mondo Gecko.
Right.
Obviously, it's Paul Rudd, but Mondo Gecko felt like the Bill and Ted. Like he really had that yin and yang. Like, you know, he was like Michelangelo's like spirit animal, basically, in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like this movie, had you done it as like an animated series and like you had those characters like work together, like you could almost do a series of just Michelangelo and Mondo Gecko, because
right,
they're kind of on that same vibe and they're feeding off each other. And I really like that vibe they had together. But some of the other stuff was.
Didn't the guy, I forgot his name, the guy that in the original 80s cartoons that voiced Michelangelo during that series, for the newer Turtle series, he voiced Mondo Gecko.
Okay.
So there's a connection there with the Michelangelo voice guy, so to the Mondo Gecko character. So he voices it for that one, or did, I guess that series is done.
Yeah. One, I think it's a fun interpretation. I like the animation style. What I really love the most is when they're getting shocked and like they had all the video game vibes in there.
Oh, yeah.
All those Easter eggs were like, they weren't like obnoxious. You know, some movies just go over the top with the nostalgia stuff.
I guess they didn't really, that makes sense. Yeah.
I felt like this really did justice to like all the video games and the turtles get shocked, because that's like a classic staple of the video games. And like every time they were getting shocked in there, like you could see the skeletons and like that animation. I really appreciated that, because it wasn't like, hey, remember this? It was like, hey, they did this in the game. This is still what that looks like. It was more of a visual representation than like a trope of like what the characters experience more than anything else, right?
Yeah. I didn't even really pick up on that. Now that you say that, yeah, that makes sense. That's a nice little Easter egg. And it wasn't too much in your face either.
The other thing I appreciate about this, which it's kind of a lost art form, but the fighting montage they did, like the turtles, like after they beat up that first gang and get April's like scooter back to her, like they did that whole fighting montage against mm-hmm. all the villains. We don't really get a lot of the story arc montages like we used to. And so to me, that was really funny, like how they kind of like push the characters through like this montage to eventually get to that story part without it feeling like excessively long or forced, because they're all fighting different people and kind of cut between the villains they're working to get to the main boss.
Right.
So
I like that. The story arcing on that and like and the pace of it, I thought was pretty good for the most part. I was just I don't know, like I just felt like they put a little too many characters in there for a little bit that didn't give them enough screen time or justice, where you wanted more Bebop and Rocksteady and you didn't get as much, and then killing off Baxter Stockman at the beginning. I don't know. Those things annoyed me, and then Splinter's whole character turned me off. But then I liked the aspect of the turtles, minus that they always want to put a bandana on Raphael. I'm like, I hate that. Just leave the mask alone. Just, and we don't need the extra shit on them. I don't know. Maybe that's the old man in me not wanting them to change as far as their appearance, but just the little shit that they always add annoys me.
Yeah, I liked most of the character design on the turtles, but to your point, yeah, they had the whole like skull like mask on Raphael, which
The skull mask, I don't like that. And then Donatello glasses, I'm like, okay, whatever, live with glasses. And then he's got a fanny pack, and then he's got like something else on there, and I'm like, guys, like just stop at it. Just don't change a character so much, just fuck shit. He looks stupid in my opinion. It gets into the Michael Bay world, you know, where he's wearing goggles on his head, like ecto goggles. It's like, what are you doing? He's a turtle, fucking stop.
So overall, I did like the turtle design. There's a few things on each of them that was like, eh, okay. But I do like the belt buckles they each had, like with their initials on there. I thought that was really cool.
They had the belt buckles going, then they had the throwing star, I think, like
yep,
right there, which I thought that was a cool little design. I was like, that's cool. That's a nice little ad, you know, because it's a ninja. Don't mm-hmm. add fanny packs and fucking glasses and band skull, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the music?
Well, I play that, for not, what is it? What's that song? What's going on or whatever. They played that for like 10 minutes.
Oh, Cranberries? Was it Cranberries? I don't remember.
No. Was it Four Non Blondes?
Four Non Blondes. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I thought the music selection was pretty cool. I like the classic 90s hip hop I enjoyed, but it was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross that did the actual scoring. And I really like some of the 8-bit like video game sounds that were inspired by that, and like just the synthesizer sounds they had in there. It almost had like a, it just felt classic, but also felt modern, right? So like almost like how the Stranger Things score feels classic but modern, because it's vintage synthesizers, but it's also incorporating like newer sound in, you know, music composition. So I appreciated that. I enjoyed it for what it was, and. Mm-hmm. After the movie, I got out and I listened to the score on the drive home, and I enjoyed that quite a bit.
I don't remember it particularly. I'd have to listen to it again. But I do normally like their stuff.
Yeah, so check that out, because I thought Trent Reznor is usually known for darker stuff, but there's a little bit more melodic stuff and happier sounding music in there, which I thought really worked pretty well for the movie and the story. The story arcs they wrote for the characters. Obviously, did you guys stay through the mid-credit scene?
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously they teased the Shredder, which is a continuation of the TCRI, which is, again, a retcon because it's a reboot of the traditional story. But what I saw of the Shredder, I thought was intriguing, and I think this movie's done well enough at the box office. We're going to see another picture in this series. So...
I'm sure they went into it with maybe a two film contract or whatever. I don't know, but they're going to make their money on this film. I'm not as high on it, where it's more one of those films like, okay, I saw it, but I have no desire to see it again.
Really? See, for me, I hated the Michael Bay stuff, and I'm excited to see another movie in this series. Now, I will say, though, that, like, them being, like, living out in the opening at the end and, like, going to high school, I thought was a little contrived, but the overall story arc of them just wanting to fit in, like, April wanting to fit in, you know, it's a very much a story about wanting to find your community of people.
Yeah.
And I feel like just as a basic human element, anyone can relate to that, and I thought that story arc for each of the characters was pretty good, but... It also takes away from what we know about Bebop and Rocksteady, right? They're very kind of, they lose their toughness. Sure, they're fun and tough to fight, but they're not the villains that we expected. So, like, that was one of the most surprising parts of the film to me, was the fact that we meet these other mutants and everyone's kind of like, hey, we're all going to kind of get along because I know your origin story. And you're like, oh, no shit, this guy knows us. He's been through the same thing.
Right.
And I think that like kind of hurts the movie at the end of it, because the way, now granted, Bebop and Rocksteady did not have a lot of lines, which considering they had John Cena as Rocksteady and obviously Seth Rogen as Bebop, I felt like, you know, you've got two pretty well-known actors portraying the role of these characters who had very few lines. Feel like Mondo Gecko we heard from the most of all the additional mutants, obviously besides Superfly.
Yeah, and each of those actors probably took 2 hours tops to do their lines for this movie.
I mean, oh yeah,
on a couple of lines, you know, do each line 5 times and then take the best ones and then he's done.
They might have a plan for them to have a bigger part in the second movie with Shredder, maybe.
I would imagine those characters are huge. Like, of course they're going to, I would imagine they would expand on them. This is just kind of like an origin story ish, you know, for the turtles and whatnot. I get it. It's just, I don't know. It just felt rushed. If you're not going to put Shredder in there, you don't necessarily have to have Bebop and Rocksteady in there right now. You know, it just seemed like they crammed more, like a lot of characters in there that didn't have to be in there for this story.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you could have had, you could have just saved Bebop and Rocksteady for the next movie.
Yeah.
And just teased them at the end or something, you know, is like,
right,
other mutants that were still kind of lying around. Like, I'm good with all the other ones kind of converting, but the fact that, like, Splinter ends up with a girlfriend and, like, in a relationship with a roach, like, what the hell?
That fucking, that was another thing about Splinter. I forgot about that. Is that, yeah, I mean, you see him making out with a thing, like, whatever, that mutant roach, I guess. I have no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And he's literally, like, with his mouth open and her mouth is open, like, together. And I'm like, guys, it's fucking Splinter. Like, you don't see him doing this, like, ever. Like, it just was a big turnoff for me. And I don't know, with my kids in the audience, I mean, it wasn't that big of a kiss or anything. It wasn't, but it was just like kind of weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I didn't, it was off-putting, maybe because I never expected Splinter to be making out on the fucking movie screen. So,
yeah. I did kind of like April's story arc, right? How she's a younger person too, and she has her own challenges. Yeah. So I liked her like character growth and her character arc.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering, like, where do you go with her in the next movie, assuming that you skip them to being out of high school? Because she's not going to be a news anchor in high school. But yeah, they kind of set that up. So it's like, what are you guys, what are you getting at? Like, I just feel like there could have been a little bit more thought into how you're going to carry this forward, basically assuming that they thought they were going to get a sequel.
Yeah, because in the Aprils that we all know, you know, April's much older than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? She's a woman, young woman professional, and they're teenagers. So this, they made her the same age essentially as the turtles. So mm-hmm. how do they go from there? I mean, that'll be interesting, but yeah, it's definitely different, right?
Well, and then I'll go ahead, Nick.
What?
What do you think? What do you think about the lack of a Foot Clan in this movie?
I would have rather had Shredder and all that stuff. I don't know a lot about the comic books, so I don't. I think Superfly is a comic book character, right?
Essentially, that's Baxter Stockman, but they've also done a few. There's a few iterations of Baxter Stockman, right? So the traditional cartoon that we all grew up on, Baxter Stockman is like a human that kind of gets mutated, which obviously that's clearly based on the movie The Fly, right? That's mm-hmm. some satire right there, but a lot of people don't realize that, but that's essentially what that's based off of. Nice. And then I think in like the 2003 animated series they did, Baxter Stockman like became like Superfly became a robot and Baxter Stockman was a separate character. But when you kill off Baxter Stockman immediately, like you immediately get rid of the chance of using Mausers in your sequel, at least in the traditional sense that we know them. So yeah, there's a lot of things there, like,
and those damn little things on wheels with the whips and electricity.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of.
Do you see Baxter Stockman die? I don't remember.
Superfly has like a little flashback where he basically sees his dad get killed. So yeah, kind of like when he's in that little mutagen tube or whatever he's in, he basically reflects on losing Baxter Stockman.
I'm sure there's a way to bring him back if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think they show him, like, dead. I think he just assumes he's dead. So, I mean, TCRI probably has him held up somewhere, which...
Right.
But making Shredder an agent of TCRI seems kind of silly. But at the same time, this is a whole new reboot, so they're just trying to do things fresh. But I also heard that when they were making this movie that they basically did 2 or 3 months worth of work and they didn't really like where they were going, so they kind of scrapped it and started over again.
Oh, wow. So they were under the gun to try to put something together in time then?
No, I think they made sure the animators weren't overworked. You know, like there's lots of, you know, like the Marvel animators group just unionized just due to like work conditions and the amount of overtime hours and things they're working on to like get projects completed in time for release. And there's been a lot of news articles going around basically saying that on Turtles, they didn't overwork the animators, even though they had these late changes in the production of the movie.
Oh, okay.
But there's like five writers listed on the movie, so it's interesting there because, you know, Seth Rogen was like the biggest name attached to it.
Yeah.
And then there's also the fact that Seth Rogen is working on like an adult animated series called Invincible, and that's on Amazon Prime. And a lot of people really like that. It came out in 2021.
I watched the first season. They just released second season a little bit ago. Adam or something. I haven't watched it yet.
And so basically what I heard was that while that was in production, like people liked that enough to say, hey, like Seth Rogen can do animation, you know, do that story writing as well. But I'm not sure what went wrong with the original story. If maybe they started going with the Shredder route and just decided they really need something fresh, which again, I did not hate anything about this movie. I just thought it was curious that they didn't incorporate certain elements and they changed certain elements, which is, it's going to happen with the reboot, right? And I'm not even upset about that in any way, shape, or form. But it just, what does that look like at the end of the day?
Well, I agree. And to this point where I feel like this movie really had a lot more potential for me to like really love it, and it just wasn't there for those things that you named off. And that's just me. I don't know. I was expecting a little bit more traditional, kind of more of a remake of the original story, you know, between Shredder and Splinter and that kind of thing. But I don't know, the fact that Splinter's, you know, hates humans and all that stuff and making out with roaches, I was like, okay, well, it's not what I wanted.
I do agree that Splinter at least should have been the serious character. I mean, if everybody's silly, then there's no like grounding in it, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like the Turtles and April were the most grounded, like down to earth characters. Like Splinter seemed kind of like a parody. Now, granted, like I say that, but I really like Jackie Chan as his voice.
Yeah.
I thought that's he did a good job.
He delivered. Jackie Chan delivered. The character was just written wrong, I feel. And
yeah, I would say that, right? His performance of the character they wrote is top notch. But the character they wrote didn't live up to expectations. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, 1,000%.
The Turtles, like, I like how they had the younger cast. I'm excited to hear them like kind of grow and change as they go to the next film. But do you do a film series? Does this same film series and animation style translate into its own TV series later? Like, that's the issue I see with animation, is like, how do you carry this on and have it still be something that's relevant in a multiple format era, right? Because you're going to get movies, you're going to get cartoons, and typically, you know, people like to separate the animation from the live action or from the movie series. But I feel like this movie, had it been like a mini series, like 10 episodes, could have really fleshed out some of the characters like Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah.
Right? And shown how they're conflicted to be loyal to Superfly, but also not wanting to be genocidal madmen.
Aren't they talking about maybe making a TV show out of it?
I haven't really 100% read up on all the news and all the reviews. I'm pretty sure they set that up, but... So I will say this.
I would imagine this could be a springboard into an animated series. I can see that.
So when I walked out of the theater last night, I was very happy with the overall story of this. But as I sit here and break it down with you, there's things that don't sit well 24 hours later, right? Which is always the problem with reviewing a movie or something like that real time, that you're going to have your initial reaction, but then you have time to think about it and digest it. And then last night I was also reading about some other people's interpretations of it, some other reviews, just to kind of see what other people thought, to see kind of where I felt this landed. And I think if you know nothing about the Ninja Turtles, this is a great introduction to the characters and to build a franchise upon for like a youthful audience. But you also have this entire generation of folks like us that have already shared some of the traditional lore, the old lore, with your family. So like, I feel like this movie plays best to an audience that has no prior knowledge of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree. Yeah, it's just, hey, you want a reboot? Okay, cool. You're going to have a reboot of audience and fans for this movie, because the more traditional, long-lasting fans that grew up on the Turtles are going to be let down, I feel, at least majority of them. I don't know, at least I was. I was definitely let down. I thought this movie had a lot more potential to, like, really, kind of like that 2003 one, I think it was, right? Like, mm-hmm. That was a good movie, I thought. It was Turtles, and it was fine. I'd rather have more Jim Henson type of Ninja Turtles, but then this just felt like it was just, I don't know, trying to grab at a lot the nostalgia, too much put in together. The art style was not consistent with, like, the character wise, like, people just drawn kind of weird. Splinter's character the entire time just upset me. But then that's a shame, because I feel like the Turtles themselves did a really good job in what they did. Like, that story was good, and the voices were good, you know, being teenagers. Mm-hmm. The design for Raph, you know, and Donatello annoyed me on a couple things, but not too bad. But the flashbacks with the Turtles and they're younger and stuff, I thought that was all good. It's just like they had potential and they just kind of fucked it up.
Yeah, see, even for me, 24 hours later, like, I don't think they fucked it up completely, but I think there's things that, as someone that grew up on the original stuff, I would have done differently. Like, but ultimately for me, I still had fun with it. A few of the things I really like is that we see Leonardo struggling to become a leader.
Yeah.
And Raphael's really calling him out on that. So, like, there's all these turtles have, like, a good individual story arc. But that first third of the movie wastes too much time kind of retelling the story of, like, the ooze and everything we already know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like with Spider-Man, like, when they finally added Spider-Man to the Marvel, the MCU stuff,
mm-hmm.
they didn't retell the traditional story because we all know that. It's so well known. Even if you're not a purist or a huge fan, like, you still know, like, hey, Peter Parker's uncle got killed.
Yeah.
Peter felt guilt, decided to become Spider-Man after this. And, like, we all know the Turtles' kind of origin story, right? There's been enough iterations of it through video games, through TV series, right? We went through the animated TV series, the 90s live action.
I was just interested if the ooze was at, for Splinter was going to be human, like the like cartoon or rodent, mm-hmm. like the movie. Of course, rodent it was. That's yeah. it. But to your point, like, we all know the origin story on this shit, so.
Yeah, you don't have to overcomplicate it. Like, same thing with Bebop and Rocksteady. They're basically, you know, even in the TV series or the original cartoon in the comics, you know, they start out as humans that basically get mutated.
Right.
And then Superfly's plan to, like, turn everyone into mutants or every creature in a mutant seemed kind of, like, overdone. Like, it just seemed like such a traditional story arc for so many other movies of, like, a villain's plan to, like, turn everyone into him, right? You know, you want everyone to become you. And, like, that seemed a little bit tired, but then again, Ice Cube delivered so well in his performance vocally
that
I was able to overlook that. Like, he really stole the show.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
I would say my favorite part of this entire movie is the voice acting, the voice cast was amazing. Everyone, there wasn't a single voice character that I thought could have been done better or done differently. Now, I was severely disappointed that some of these characters didn't have hardly any lines or enough dialogue. Right. Like, Bebop and Rocksteady had hardly anything to say. And, like, really only the second time we've seen them in feature film form, right? And I was disappointed that we didn't have more of them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, save him for another movie. Save him for the sequel. Tease him at the end, like you mentioned, because, like, just don't cram them in there to cram in. And then have them be friends with the Turtles in the very first movie, you know, trying to for one common goal. It's like, they're supposed to be the bad guys. Like, they're supposed to be a Shredder. I mean, maybe they're just doing something way different, which is whatever. It's not my Turtles, I guess, so.
I can forgive that because, like, we've all had friends in real life that you've had a falling out with, right? Sure. So you may have gotten through some tough times with. So if they write it well, they could say that, you know, they kind of had a falling out with that. And so they decide to follow Shredder in the next movie, right? And you could write that well enough, but you really have to let them shine at that point. If you have them follow Shredder for no reason in the next movie and it's lazy writing or it's not really thought through, then I think that's really where you're going to fail those characters again.
Yeah, I expected I expected some of the mutants to side with Superfly, you know.
Yeah.
Then they just all turn on them on a dime, you know, and it's like, I figured Bebop and Rocksteady would at least like side with him, but.
Well, and I didn't think they'd side with him, but I just thought there would be more. You would see more of their internal conflict, like shining out, like, hey, we don't agree with what you want to do, but we don't agree with him. And they would kind of do their own thing. But they end this movie with like this gigantic mutant family living together, which is going to be very problematic for the sequel and adding Shredder and the Foot Clan, because obviously the Foot Clan should have been operating in New York City the whole time. And we don't see any of that. So, which to the same point, you know, if you go back to the original animated movie they did where Shredder has already been defeated and, you know, they kind of go that other route. Like, that movie really lacks the Shredder element, and it's not that you need Shredder to be alive again, but you need to have a villain that is believable and that really drives the story. And Superfly did fine in this movie, but I think when you really leave Shredder out, it kind of creates some problems. Like, this movie felt like it would have been a great sequel to after Shredder was defeated temporarily or something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be in a good sequel villain. Now, it worked well enough to, like, reboot the franchise and say, hey, we're not going with the traditional, but...
Yeah.
You have to be traditional.
You're building... Yeah, well, that, and you're building the foundation for the story arcs where the Foot Clan has been doing all this shit for a number of years in New York, and who's been behind it. So, like, this syndicate. I mean, again, that's going off of the original stuff, so... This is a reboot, so are they just like, nope, that's not the story we want to tell, and they're doing something way different, which, okay, but I don't know how much I want to, like, invest in that. I definitely think I would see a sequel of this, but maybe more wait until it streams or something that versus going and pay for it, you know, at the theater.
Yeah, which is kind of back to the Michael Bay thing. Like, right, I saw the first one in theaters just because I was excited for it. Didn't see the second one in theaters.
Yeah. I think I did the same thing. I don't even remember, but I was like, yep, I'm not paying money to see this second one. And I never saw the second one at all. I was just like, no, it's not worth my time.
And for me, it was like years later. I was like, well, I really want to see what they do with Bebop and Rocksteady in this movie. And that was the only reason I watched it. And it was, again, disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they didn't really do anything with it. So they've got potential to course correct here, but they've also got the potential to do some really weird stuff. And so I think if you're going to go this route, you need to be weird and keep doing different stuff instead of trying to course correct. Like, I think if they course correct to what us older fans want, they're really going to do a disservice to like how the movie should be overall.
Right.
So.
I agree.
I had enough fun with it. Like, I'll show it to the kids when it comes on home video and we'll kind of go from there, but it's not one of those movies I'm like, ooh, I need to see that again
immediately. I love how you said home video, by the
way. Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because we've seen all the problems with streamers, like having profitable returns and all the stuff they've taken off of there. Like Nick was talking about the movie with McKenna Grace that came on, Disney Plus called Crater. And it was on Disney Plus for 2 months before they pulled it, basically due to some of the streaming contracts they'd written currently to basically pay out for that since it wasn't a theatrical release. So they're trying to cut costs with all this. So home video, physical format, physical releases are going to see a pretty big comeback now that so much stuff has been pulled or swept from under your feet on the streaming platforms because... You'd think, I don't need to buy that. I can watch it any time. But then now that streamers are saying, we're not going to have everything on there.
Paramount Plus took the Star Trek cartoon off. They did one season. They decided to cancel it, but they still got season two in production, and they're going to find someone else to stream that. They took the first season, which is done and aired, off their site.
Are you talking about Star Lower Trek? Decks? Because they've done
Prodigy.
Prodigy, I heard. Because Lower Decks is still going. It's like three seasons in or four seasons, and it's good. Yeah.
And it's animated. I think Prodigy is the good one. Like,
It's animated Prodigy.
Yeah, it's a Nickelodeon, which is still owned by the same people as Paramount, right. I think. But
so what they have, yeah, they just canceled it.
They canceled it even though they were producing the second season, and they just took it off their streaming site. Like the first season, they just took it off Paramount Plus.
For what reasons?
Probably the same thing that
cost cutting. Really, ultimately, right now, what's going on with streamers is that every streamer is having a hard time being profitable with it because they've tried to, like, everyone tried to shoehorn in their own content, but you're still competing with cable to some degree. But at the same time, you look at ad-supported streaming, like, say, Tubi. Like, Tubi has a lot of live TV channels they've just recently added in the past 6 months. And, like, why would you pay for cable service or certain streaming services when you can get this ad supported for free? And they have newer content on there too, like brand new content. They even have original made for Tubi stuff. And there's a lot of the free streamers out there like Crackle that are kind of on that same model of, hey, this is a free streaming platform, but it's ad supported. So you have to watch the ads, but that's what pays for it. That's what pays for the content. So we're at a really bizarre time of, the home video release is going to be a big thing for people again, because everyone thought it was dead because of streaming, but as streamers remove this content, people want that permanently. And the only way to have that permanently is to own the physical media of it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm fascinated, especially when Netflix and Amazon are really the only streamers, like how it works as far as how they make money. Like, why, like, Netflix started making their own TV shows and movies when they were already successful. Like, how are they generating that extra income from subscribers to pay for millions of dollars for a TV show or movie? Like, I don't understand how the Netflix business model works.
Well, I think Netflix ultimately was originally paying people to stream their content, and then as content providers were selling their content, right? Because let's say you look at Twisted Metal series, for example, right? That's on Peacock, but it was produced by Sony Television. So a lot of these programs are actually going out there. They're being produced by one studio, being streamed by another, like the Batman animated series. The newest one, I think, was dropped by Max.
Yeah.
And be picked up by Netflix, right? And so you're looking at this time where people are paying for content, but at the same time, content's going up everywhere. Like, and everyone's trying to get that Stranger Things level of streaming phenomenon. And it's just not feasible, right? It costs too much. Like, these shows cost a lot of money to make. And so ultimately what's going to happen, people are still going to create content and they're just going to sell it to whoever wants to pay for it, right? So yeah, Sony Pictures might make their Twisted Metal and Peacock picks it up, but later on, you know, like that might go somewhere else. But the home video release, like, I think we're going to see, like, going back to the Netflix bit, Stranger Things season one and season two, like, had really nice Blu-ray releases from Netflix, which was some of their first foray into, like, the home video physical content releases. But the other seasons, three and four, never got that release. But I think what you're seeing now is, like, they need that additional income stream to release those, because who's going to say how long Netflix has had that stuff? Now, I will say Netflix has been better than other streamers about not removing content they've already paid for that they essentially own and, like, dumping that elsewhere. Like, another bizarre thing, right? So NBC Universal owns Friends. Well, Friends is exclusively streaming on the Max platform because Max wanted that on there to gain subscribers, just like Netflix had The Office for the longest time, and that reverted back to NBC, so they threw that on Peacock. So
and that hurt them a lot, supposedly.
And streaming is such a bizarre place right now, and being profitable there just isn't the same way as it used to be. So it's going to be, you still need that physical format sale to ensure people that really love a series can watch it whenever they want without having any interruptions, and also not, like, preventing content from being created. So we're at a bizarre time, especially with the writer's strike and the SAG after strike, right? I think we're looking at what happens with that. And I recall the HBO, well, I mean, I guess the Discovery, whatever you want to call the company. I don't know what even the parent company is. But for the Max streaming, you know, they're saying they anticipated the strikes to end by the end of September. But on their quarterly earnings report, they're bragging about how they saved $100 million this last quarter. Well, you didn't create any content this last quarter because everyone was on strike. So sure, yeah, you save money for your shareholders, but you don't have any content to prove or to sell for it. So essentially, when the strike is over, you're lacking all this content. You save money for your shareholders, but you have nothing to return on your investment from.
Well, they said it would cost $400 million to give the strikers everything they want, and that would be split across all the studios. That seems like such a small amount of money when you factor, like, every movie they make now is $300 million budget, plus a couple hundred more for advertising. And
well, and that also goes back to the other issue at hand, right? Like, Sean Gunn really did a great job calling out Bob Iger. So Bob Iger, and this isn't just Disney as an entire company, this is basically Disney as the entertainment company, content provider, but said that Bob Iger makes 400 times a year what his lowest paid employee makes. But that's in the entertainment industry. That's not including, like, Disney World, because when you look at Disney World employees' hourly rates, he's probably making 800 to 1,000 times more than what those people make at the lowest rate. Yeah. And that's across the entertainment industry, right? Same thing with, and I think the Max CEO right now is the highest paid amongst all of these guys. And so you have all these people that don't want to pay the little guy, but they have these inflated salaries, these inflated bonuses. And you're really having a hard time figuring out, like, how do you balance the pay? Well, essentially, you bring back the middle class, because, like, that right now, the middle class is going away because CEOs and corporate executive, like, salaries are so high, you're just creating this gap between your lowest paid and your highest paid that there's very few people in that middle gap. There's less people there in the middle than there has ever been before.
Yeah.
So the Warner Brothers Discovery guy is the highest paid?
As far as, like, all the streamers and content providers, he's one of the higher paid executives. Yeah, as far as CEOs go. And he's also one of the cheapest, right? You know, they're bragging about $100 million savings. And I'm like, well, you know, when it comes down to it,
down the road, you don't have any
some of those. I mean, in my opinion, and I'm speaking from the little guy here, but none of these CEOs should have a high salary. They should be at a very low salary. And all their earnings should be based on company performance, right? If you don't perform well and you don't know how to lead your company to success, you don't get the bonus that makes you that one percenter. But we're just not living in that way. That's just not how it is.
But I will say, gentlemen, I apologize, but I probably have to get going here. Not you guys can continue, just FYI, but I probably have to jump here.
Jerry's got to catch a flight in the morning. He's going on vacay.
Yes.
So appreciate you joining tonight, Jerry.
Yeah,
where are you going?
Florida for a couple days, and then taking a cruise with some friends of ours through Debbie. So I got a deal on some stuff. So it'll be fun. We're having some family over here. It actually works out well because they'll come here and house sit and live here for hang out before they go back to school. They wanted to come up to Kansas City, so it kind of works out.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so it works
out. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Nick, you got any final thoughts? We may as well just shut the show down.
I think it was good enough for a sequel.
We have a rating. Do we do out of 10, or what do you guys want to do?
Yeah, let's rate it. What do you rate this out of 10? 10 mutagen canisters. How many?
For me, I don't know. Going into this, I was thinking 4 or 5. But then after talking to you guys, like, some of the things I liked more, I'd probably say 6. I'd give it 6.
Okay, Nick, what about you?
I think I'll give it a 7.
I can tell you that I like this more than either of you, so I give it an 8. When I think about the whole franchise overall, I think this is the best movie since Secret of the Ooze. It's the second best origin story for the Turtles for me. It beats the hell out of the Michael Bay stuff. It beats the hell out of a lot of the animated series that have rehashed this before. Right, and some of the animated series, you know, they got the time, the luxury to tell the story over several episodes, but to me, it's the original. As far as origin stories, it's the original live-action movie and then this. But well, I do like Secret of the Ooze more than this, but the fact that Casey Jones isn't in there, like, they're very, very close for me here right now. And that might change with time.
And my ratings is based on my personal, what I would have wanted in the movie versus the quality of the actual movie, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that in my vote. They did some things very well, but, you know, I was annoyed with some of the animation not being consistent with characters. Just one person looked good, one person looked exaggerated. So, you know, that took a few points off for me, but I don't know. It was worth watching at home, I would say, but I wouldn't go pay to see it again.
That's fair. I'm happy I saw it in theaters. I really like the score and the music soundtrack live and in a big theater, but it just depends on your personal connection with the Turtles, right? And your open-mindedness. And so let us know in the comments here. Let us know in the feedback, like, what you thought of this. Like, where does it stack rank to you with all the Turtles movies? And maybe that's something we'll throw up on social media later, is like rank your Turtle movies, all the movies, and like, where does this rank with that? But we don't have that ranking right now. But for me, I can tell you that's second or probably third on the list overall. Maybe fourth. I really like the first animated movie even more so than Turtles in Time or Turtles 3. So,
all right. Well, that's fair. Yeah, we could do that. Put it on the social media. We can rank them. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll throw it up there. Yeah, let us know your ranking too. But thanks for tuning in, and we'll see everyone soon.
Bye.
Bye.